Also, thanks everybody for getting up so early. It is Easter Sunday, 8 a.m. and what,
8:03
on the clock. And we are surrounded by very happy people. Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. My name is Brock Dittus. I am barely awake, but I am simplifying the good life.
Sorry, I just cut you off there. And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that bring you some irreverent conversations, somewhat irreverent conversations, about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best coffee the world has to offer.
We need more of this coffee.
That's right.
We need covering bicycling, trains in transit, and simpler living. And today, all sorts of fun fat bike adventure stuff.
Yeah, fat bikes. We are here in the room with Nathan Jones from Ride Your Bike. Is that how you pronounce it? Is it
Ride Your Bike?
When someone says YR.
No, your, it's Ride Your
Bike. Ride Your.
Oh, no, we're thinking of your last name. Do you pronounce it Jones or Jones?
Jones. Yes.
Yeah,
No, it's Ride Your Bike is the first shop I am aware of that is specializing in fat bike rentals.
This is correct. Yeah.
So thank you, first of all, for offering that fabulous service to the world. And thank you, secondly, for coming in because you've done a bunch of really interesting things. And so we're going to hear some stories.
Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm excited. Sir. Yes, sir. And Dan Kaufman.
Cheers.
From Crank
Coffee
My Chain
cheers.
TV. Is that right?
Yes.
Crank My Chain Cycle TV.
Cycle TV.
All right. I want to make sure I got it right. And yeah, I was in your confessional booth just last night at Filmed by Bike.
Yeah. In fact, yeah, you were on TV.
Yes. And I confess. But it wasn't a very good confession.
I don't know about that. I like it was short and sweet.
Okay.
And it was a confession. I mean, so you came in and you did it right. You
okay.
Know?
Do you have to feel remorse or do you just have to confess?
You don't have to feel remorse, but you do have to have a release.
Okay. There we go. Excellent. Well, I was released by you.
That's right. We got your signature and you released your identity and your face. And although we do conceal, we were concealing folks who had very private confessions that they wanted to get. One guy really, it was like, do you want me to scramble your voice now too? And he's like, yeah, that would be good.
Oh, dang.
It's like people start being honest. And this we should explain more fully. The confessional booth is set up outside of the Film by Bike, kind of at the street party.
Right.
And the idea being that people are going to just kind of walk in and say, here's a thing that I haven't told people that they should know.
Yeah. Or a story or an adventure or people just actually doing crazy things on camera like some of the zoo bombers were last night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Wait, were they creating like new reasons for confession?
Yeah.
On camera. In the booth. Interesting.
Yes, what? I need a confessional booth for my confessional booth confession.
Yeah. A secondary confession. Yeah, and then the tertiary and quaternary and so on and so forth. Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that. Much appreciated.
Oh, it's fun.
And
by the way, I'll be throwing up the videos from last year on crankmychain.com. So if you want to check out those, I'll be throwing them up early this week.
Okay, fabulous. Filmed by Bike, it's a fantastic thing. And this is the first year I have participated in the street party, which now that I have done it, I'm like, why didn't I do this like 4 years ago?
I know.
So this is a good time.
I've been trying to tell you.
Free. That's the thing, yeah. I think I've always been way too busy to do things.
Yeah.
Like, and it's one of those things, kind of like Easter. Dan, you and I were talking about how Easter's not really like on the calendar, and it kind of sneaks up on you if you're not ready for it. Filmed by Bike, I think for me, for most of my life, is kind of like that, where like I know it's happening, and it sounds like a fun time, and I want to be a part of the egg hunt, but just, you know, not that Filmed by Bike has an egg hunt every year. I think this is the coincidental
year.
This
is the first year they had the egg hunt.
Okay, yeah. But
did
that's
you get
happening.
Anything cool?
No, that's happening today.
Oh, that's today.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, but I don't think I'll be there.
Shit, I'm going to miss that too.
That's okay. I'm going to go buy my own eggs later.
Well, we've got time for you to get into church, which is really where you should be.
Right, excellent.
Right now.
Excellent.
Not me, but you.
Right, right. Is Bike Temple
upset? Because you run
today?
The confessional booth. You know he needs to be in church.
I've already got I got a straight shot to God already.
Excellent. Well, as long as we know.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, by the time this hits the world, Filmed by Bike will be done and over with. But we got to say,
you done missed out, people.
Dozen years of Filmed by Bike, just like a dozen eggs. that will be found in the Clinton Street Theater later this afternoon. There might be more than a dozen. But good job, Alien Karate, for putting together a fabulous production. Fabulous selection. And I think Adele and I were saying last night that the video quality has only gone up over the years because it's very easy now to get, you know, your own HD cameras and such for a fairly reasonable price. Whereas, you know, even 4 years ago, that stuff was way more expensive. So, yeah, people are creating wonderful films and submitting wonderful films, mostly.
Are you allowed to say which one's your favorite yet?
As a juror? Well, I'm very partial to the one featuring the guy who's the pink devil at the bicycle
yeah,
races.
He was cool.
Or you know, just
the fact that I saw that already though.
Yeah,
kind of took some of the polish off of it for me, or some of the veneer.
Yeah, no, but it was fun just to see a guy, you know, just like, you know, he's dressed up like the devil and he's going, ah, and he poked Mark Cavendish with his trident.
Yeah, take that, Cavendish.
And yeah, that and. The one with the fellow at the end of our program who kind of like did this ballet dance with his
bicycle.
Wasn't
that fucking beautiful?
In an abandoned building. Yeah.
I think that might be my favorite.
Yeah, like three or four stories of abandoned buildings somewhere in Toronto or something like that. And the guy has moves. He's like, he must be a profane and professional dancer. like kind of like making love to his bike on the floor. And it was absolutely fantastic. So.
Well, it's going on right now. I don't know if the podcast will be out in time, but if you can't make it to this year's, then check it out in 2015.
That's right.
And submit your film.
Yes.
You can do it on your cell phone or whatever, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
As long as it's completely captivating in less than 8 minutes.
Right. Yeah, which that's a pretty good, like, that's not a barrier to entry, really. Like, I think anybody can put together 8 minutes of film.
Or two or one, if 30 seconds of awesomeness.
Yeah. Anything you want. Yeah. So anyway, that we've been having a good time here in Portland, Oregon. Well, let's talk about fat bikes. And maybe a good place to start, Nathan, would be with you about this cross-country thing.
Well, the Trans Am race is kind of separate from the fat biking, really. It's really a road bike race.
Oh, never mind. I'm sorry. It's so early.
Right. No.
I was like, here's a super awesome guy. He did a super awesome thing. Let's throw fat bikes in there. Not the case.
It's because they're fat.
Let's start with fat bikes.
With the fat bikes. We started the rental business back in December of last year.
Yeah.
And basically, we're just kind of like, well, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the fat bike market's really exploding. They're just everywhere. They got a full suspension fat bike now. They got one with a suspension fork on the front. And
who's making those?
Salsa, a company out of Colorado called Borealis. It's really taken off. It's got a big scene down in Bend. They're working to build 40 miles of fat bike specific trails out there.
Really?
But there's nothing really been put together in Portland on it. And myself and Dan here, we're kind of like, well, you know, they seem like a lot of fun. We didn't really have a lot of experience with them, but I've got a lot of background with the adventure biking and just bike packing in general and getting out for overnighters. And we're like, well, let's throw these fat bikes into the mix. And so we put the fleet together and started renting them. And now we're just kind of doing our thing with them, trying to get them out there in various sorts of ways. And
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I was thinking about this, for example, with the John Wayne Trail up in Washington. It would be fabulous to be able to rent a bike and ride your bike across this old rail corridor across eastern Washington. But the trick is, like, half of it is basically just old ballast. And even a good mountain bike would not necessarily give you what you needed to do that in relative comfort. So I've been thinking, like, wouldn't it be great to rent a fat bike and ride it, like, you know, from Vantage, Washington to Tico, Washington, over all this old, like, rail bed stuff. But yeah, up until the time that I learned of your shop, I was like, where does one rent a fat bike? So are you the first to rent these in town?
I think I'm the first. There's a shop in town that's got a fleet that's tried to rent them out, but I don't think they've had a lot of luck with them. I forget the name offhand, but they're over on the west side. But we're the only shop that's really making it their primary focus.
Yeah, yeah. So you saw a hole and aimed to fill it, I assume.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how did you get into the fat biking thing personally? Like, did you have an adventure or something that kind of endeared you to the mode?
I mean, we got the bikes back in December, And there's a big ride we really wanted to do to the coast. And that was that was the big Salmonberry ride.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much kind of our proving ground for them. It's like, well, can you do them on a big, you know, almost 100-mile ride, you know, with like 10,000 feet of climbing and all of that. And
various terrains, you know, we had snow and gravel and pavement and, you know, just kind of a proof of concept for us, you know.
Yeah.
And I was sold. I got done with that and was like, I'm selling my mountain bike. I think it was actually a mountain bike ride that we did where I got done. And I was like, that was fun. And that was just a short little mountain bike ride, but it was great downhill and I had a blast. And then we did that ride over the coast and was like, which by the way, was not on the actual Salmonberry. There are a couple of guys who actually did the ride on the Salmonberry, on the old train, line that was there, but they did on fat bikes. It sounded almost impossible even with the fat bikes,
right.
But
hence the need for public process and machines to clear out the fallen trees and such.
Well, yes, and we can talk about that later, but that was the ride that we really enjoyed.
We've got the shop, we've got the fat bikes, we've got some adventures, the Salmonberry Corridor. We should talk about the Salmonberry Corridor now while it's here, because this is a thing that is kind of in the works. It's coming up, and Aaron, you and I talked about this when it hit the news a couple of months back. And basically the idea was that there's this old rail corridor no longer being used. It used to go from Portland to the coast, I believe, right? It's one of these weekending
Banks,
trains.
Which is just out of Hillsboro on the west side, down to the coast in Nehalem Bay, town of Wheeler, and then all the way down to Tillamook. So this is about another 18 miles, I believe, for a total of 70 miles. It takes you up and over the range through some of the thickest wilderness in northwest Oregon.
Yeah, and this is a defunct rail corridor. It's no longer being used. Matter of fact, it can't be used because it's in disrepair. But the idea is like, hey, people could ride their bikes to the coast. And I believe, what was it, Mayor Charlie Hales, when he was campaigning, had said like, as mayor of Portland, the first thing I will do is create a, you know, 100-mile trail to Astoria or something like that, which ended up not being the case.
It's kind of overreaching
a little
your
bit.
Powers as mayor.
Right. I mean, you could kind of like, you could make a really nice trailhead in Portland or something.
True.
But
gosh,
this,
if I'd known that, I might have voted for him.
I might have voted, period.
The tenability of it, I think, it just got you like we say, it perhaps somewhat overshooting what you can do as mayor when the trail leaves your town. But this is an actual possible off-road path to the ocean, which would open up connections for tons of people to get out there using bicycles.
That's right. You know, you've got Cycle Oregon, some folks there, Jonathan Nicholas, who help envision the concept. The trail had been wiped out by a flood. They rebuilt the train line, then rebuilt and then wiped out again. It's a train line that had never made profit for any of its owners going all the way back. In fact, the name of the line, the nickname is the Punk, Rotten, and Nasty.
Ah.
And PNNR, I guess, which was the name of it. It's now owned by the Port of Tillamook. And actually part of it is still a functioning rail line. There's a scenic railway down on the coastal section. But the idea is that, yes, you could ride a bike. It may not be a paved situation for the whole ride just because it's so remote, and where the line was built was actually kind of in the watershed, if you will. So it had this situation where it's just going to keep getting wiped out.
It keeps getting washed.
You know, as a mountain bike kind of trail, it could be done through the Salmonberry Corridor, which are the Salmonberry area, which is the big wilderness part of it. But then it goes down the Nehalem River, which is also beautiful, not quite as rugged, and there it would be easier to do. Now, that's where the regular rail line goes to now, the scenic railway. And then the coastal section, which, you know, all of it I'm excited about, because the idea that you could get on a bike and ride something that's close to railroad grade all the way to the coast is just amazing.
Yeah.
It'd be the best route we could possibly have to the coast, because we don't have anything good right now. I mean, it's all right if you take the Salem route down to the Trans Am route heading to the coast, but yeah, the story is kind of okay. But
does that take you like through McMinnville, or is that the route that they give, or is it somewhere else?
It would start over at Stubb Stewart. Isn't that where they wanted to start it at?
Oh, are you talking about the southern, the Highway 22?
Oh, I was just, yeah, just curious. Like the existing options now, I guess, where would we go? Because you could
go down to past McMinnville and then down south on past Amity, Monmouth, all of that, and then cut out, I think, around Amity towards, or it's Monmouth. Yeah, Amity and Monmouth. You can take that.
You know, you can ride any of the major routes out to the coast, and there's one that's going from every major town in the valley, basically, out to the coast, and you can ride your bicycle. And it's not bad. I mean, comparatively, for road riding, it's pretty nice compared to the rest of the country. But, you know, most people don't really want to ride alongside a highway. And
that's essentially what exists.
And that's what exists. Yeah. Or you can do what we did, which is to find one, you know, to find the logging road and Forest Service road routes up and through the coast range. Of course, you're going to be dealing with like lots of elevation. I mean, situations where, I mean, we were pushing even the fat bikes, which have great traction.
I pushed for like a mile up a 20% grade to get out there. Like
that's pretty intense. Yeah. So tell me about the route finding. Like, how did you guys did you decide beforehand, or did you kind of pick a general area and take a map along?
Yeah, I've got a lot of experience just laying out routes and studying maps and so forth. So I just kind of laid something out in Google Earth and studied it the best I could. And you know, the map data is probably like a year and a half old, so it's just kind of like hope there's no new logging changes back there that have redone all the roads. And we actually got about 35 miles back and we were like, oh, this road doesn't really exist anymore. So we kind of had to.
That's a funny story.
Yeah. Yes. What happened?
So we're riding and all of a sudden we're kind of going around in circles a little bit, trying to find this road that we missed. And we're like, it's supposed to be right here. You know, we both have GPS. But what we didn't have was a paper map. And so we're like, what the heck is going on? And we finally run into, I mean, we hadn't seen cars for miles. I mean, really quite a long time. We had seen no cars. We run into a truck and it just happens to be a Department of Forestry guy from the State Department of Forestry. And he's got maps. He's got his GPS. He goes, yeah, I'm looking for that same road right now.
Oh, shit. You know you're in trouble with the
and
with
I can't find it. So finally he pulls out the paper map and we're able to kind of figure out that it really doesn't exist. And so we took a different route and then we kind of bushwhacked for a little while. And fortunately didn't get ourselves lost. And that was fun. I mean, it was neat to do that. I think the one thing that I learned from all that is that you should also have a paper map with you. I don't know, Nathan might have a differing opinion.
I mean, if you want to get to your endpoint, make sure you have a paper map or be prepared to backtrack.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
That's always my approach. I'm always ready to backtrack if need be, so eschew the map.
It's kind of part and parcel with the experience, right? Like if you're going places where you know people don't go usually, then you're probably going to come up against something that you can't quite do. And you can schlep through some things, but you can't schlep over everything.
This is very true.
Yeah.
No, I mean, then there's the saying, you know, death by Google, and that exists.
I haven't heard that.
Oh, you haven't?
Have you heard this, Aaron?
I've not.
Death by Google.
I
imagine I've probably suffered from this before.
Yeah, I mean, not. I would definitely suggest not going just off of Google Maps. That's how you kind of get your starting point. But, you know, definitely if you're out in the wilderness, you want to have a GPS or a map and wayfinding skills, of course. And what happens is people just get a Google Map and it's not all accurate, you know.
Right.
And then they find themselves, you know, over at, you know, Grandpa Joe's with the shotgun, you know, and the five dogs or whatever. Right. Actually, we kind of ran into those dogs, I think, at one point, too, didn't we?
Five dogs and Grandpa Joe?
Grandpa Joe was in the barn, I think, or the tractor doing something. He didn't see us, but the dogs did. And they were kind of shocked and surprised, and we just kind of blasted through it before they knew what was happening.
Is this one of those situations where it's like it was kind of a public road, and then it became a private road, and then it became a public road again somewhere else? Like you're kind of like dodging through someone's backyard?
It's starting to get kind of vague, about what it was exactly. You know, power lines and these forest roads and private property, kind of way out there. Not really a home or anything, but yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, at some point it was clearly that we were going on to the private timberland, and there were signs. And one thing that was really cool was it's like, you know, here's the things that are allowed. You can hike, you can bike, you know.
Right.
But you can't motorcycle, you can't hunt, you can't obviously go in there and chop down their trees and take them out, you know.
Of course.
So
right. That would be counterproductive.
Well, for them. Yes.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, we are thinking about this fat bike logging thing, but we haven't really got that off the ground.
Okay. Yeah. Well, one step at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
And we already know from Ted Buehler how to transport long loads with a kind of a tractor trailer sort of setup.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I do have the ladder trailer. We could probably
figure that's right.
It
you
out.
Do. Yeah, because yes. You brought that to Lance Poehler's bike move, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah. Attached to the back of your trike.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what 250 pounds of firewood is, or wood, you know, lumber, in terms of a cord of wood. But, I mean, I guess it would get you through a few days.
Sure,
but,
sure.
Yeah. No, they got the ladder trailer. It's a lot of fun. That was hand-built at OMSI under the care of their machinists. But, so anyway,
yes.
Let's not go too far down that. But back to Salmonberry.
Yes.
Shoot. I lost my train of thought. Yeah, we went on to private timberland. That was neat that they are allowing us to use it, and I think it's a great experience for people who are into that kind of adventure. I love gravel road riding. I love adventure riding. I know Nathan does too.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's probably not something you're going to take your family on, your parents, your kids.
Indeed.
You know, somebody who's not an experienced bike rider, it would really... probably end up not being fun at all. For
yeah,
them.
And Aaron, for you and I, when we did that with the Rust family, we had
yes.
two little girls under 5 years old
in
two
not
different
having
bicycle
as much
trailers.
Fun as us.
Yeah, and that wasn't even like private. That wasn't for it was for service roads, but yeah. Like that was like the main kind of drag through the area.
Sure,
it just happened to be very steep and hot and uncomfortable,
and gravelly.
Yeah. But yes, this is the sort of thing that's more for kind of the bold and the adventurous that would like to strike out and create a new path.
Right. And, you know, so, and that's great. And we want to promote that. And Travel Oregon is working on with the state parks and Department of Forestry and Oregon Department of Transportation. They're working on gravel pathways that can be interconnected because there's a lot of that in the state. Gravel road riding is blowing up. I mean, that's definitely another niche for Nathan's business at Ride Your Bike is providing support and parts and tools and bikes and whatnot to do that. And fat bikes are great for gravel road riding. Surprisingly, I thought it would be way overkill.
Sure.
It was great. And especially when we got up to 3,000 feet and hit the snow, it was like, okay, I'm really glad I have a fat bike right now.
And you guys were doing this in, was it February?
January.
Okay. So it was very, very early in the season, and some snow was there.
Yeah. We didn't think there would be any of the National Oceanic Association or whatever. Their snow levels show there'd be nothing up there, and we got up there, and there's like 4 or 5 inches left. And
there it was.
We were super happy because it went on for about 10 miles, and we just got to ride right on top of it. And
yeah. What's the experience of riding a fat bike in snow?
I mean, if it's frozen, you can just float right on top of it. You know, a little narrower tire kind of break through when it's frozen, but the big fat ones, they just float right on top of it. And it's got this kind of surreal feel to it. It makes this really weird sound because of the acoustics of the snow and the knobbies on the tire. And
yeah,
it's like being on another planet. Kind of, if you've ever ridden a bike anywhere else, you would
sure.
hop on one of those and it's just like, wow, this is different.
Yeah, bikes in space.
Right.
Right. On Uranus. Which,
yes. By the way, I think there's a second volume of Taking
bikes
the Lanes,
space?
Bikes in Space.
Oh,
yes.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, again, I was wrong. It's not silly. It's actually pretty awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. I would lend you our copy, but we sent it to a listener. So, anyways, the tires on a fat bike, we're talking about, like, what's the sizing on that?
They go from about 3 3/4 inches to 5 inches.
Okay.
That's kind of the norm.
Yeah. Yeah. So that gives you plenty of, like you're saying, like room to float.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, yeah, again, at the top of the Salmonberry, well, at the top of the Coast Range near the Salmonberry Corridor, you were floating over snow and then you descend to the west side.
That was one of the best parts.
Yeah.
The descent. We lowered our tire pressure to like, what, I don't know.
5 to 7 PSI. Yeah. Just really.
Oh, gosh.
You can go ridiculously low with them. Some people run them down to 3 PSI. But.
So I had my GPS with the speedometer thing on it, you know, following Nathan. He kind of pulled away from me at about 40 miles an hour going down.
That's intense.
Yeah.
At 3 PSI.
Well, that's more like 5 or 7.
Yeah. Right. But this is just like just enough to keep the rim off of the ground.
Pretty much.
We were blasting. And, you know, I think if I had been on a mountain bike, I would have slowed down just because of the like, oh, I'm going to slip out. I had to slow down more like I'm driving a fast car or motorcycle down the hill so fast that I'm not going to be able to stop in time. Somebody's coming up the hill that's why I had to check my speed, you know, which is, you know, I'm usually kind of a pussy when it comes to going fast downhill. I've had speed wobbles too many times and whatnot. I just was like, just balls out. I loved it.
Right. Well, I was just thinking about this. There's a vintage video, I think, somewhere on your channel about you riding down a sand dune on a bike.
Yes.
That was like, what, 2005 or something like that,
It was way back at the beginning of Crank My Chain, and I took a BMX, vintage BMX cruiser bike up to the top of the coast dunes and tried to run down it, and it just sucked.
So if you'd had a fat bike, it would have been a completely different experience.
Believe me, it is on my bucket list, like my near-term bucket list.
There we go.
We're bringing some of our fat bikes down to Newport for rental later on this year, and we're going to be bringing some up to Mount Hood.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, I would imagine there's some good riding to be had around Hood as well.
Definitely. Yeah, we were just up there two days ago at Frog Lake Snow Park, like 8 miles east of government camp there. And yeah, it's a snowmobile trail that's just, it's only got packed down once this winter. And it's all bumpy and melted. And we just kind of went out and rode around probably a good 4 mile loop on it. And it was great snow riding right in our backyard. We were worried that it's going to be tough to find it, and we just went right up there, and sure enough, we're riding on snow and
easily done.
It's exciting.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So maybe just one thing to touch on is that both of you went out to do this. You were going to the coast for a public process meeting for this corridor that's going in. And you had said, like, if I remember the article correctly, you wrote it, Dan, and it was basically like, you know, if I'm going to go out and say, hey, there should be bikes here, there should be, you know, facilities for bikes here, it wouldn't make sense if you showed up, like, in a minivan or something. So you said, we're going to bike here to show that there are people that, well, was that the motivation? Was it kind of like a demonstration of, like, there is bikey support for this idea?
I think, there's definitely the demonstration of... Yeah, that we have a desire. Our desire is so strong for this that we're willing to ride our bikes out there. I would not begrudge anybody for taking their minivan out there to support the Salmonberry Trail or any sort of coastal pathways, because right now, for a lot of people, that's just the only safe and accessible way that they can get up and down the coast and out to the coast.
It's right.
It just doesn't make sense for most people to ride their bike on highways. You know, some people it's great and it's lovely and road riding. And if you've got the legs and the strength and the desire to do it, I love it. I mean, for me personally. So I just wanted to clarify that, you know, I don't have anything against people supporting this kind of stuff with minivans.
Right.
But the hope is that, yes, then people can, all sorts of people can start coming out there. And I think the folks on the coast get that, you know, They would not only want to see a safer way for people to travel, they want options in their communities for more healthy ways that they can get around and exercise. But they see the economic development potential of having routes that people can use so that they can tour the coast and family. Because so much of about what the coast has to offer is family-friendly tourism, you know,
right.
Things that you can do. Unfortunately, if you want to go to point A to point B, you know, safely with your family, you do have to get in the minivan to get there. And so I think it's really becoming obvious that not only this would be great for coastal communities, but it'd be great for the people who come to visit as well.
Sure.
And that's, you know, so we are there to kind of help promote that and support that. I've gotten involved very closely with the Salmonberry Corridor Coalition, and I'm going to be joining a committee to help further that support. I see this trail as a great pilot project to show the whole rest of the state, you know, if we can successfully do this and if we can pave a pathway down the coastal section that's safe and accessible for everybody, I think it's just going to catch on like wildfire, and pretty soon everybody will want the whole coast done, and they'll want routes out to the various parts of the state. And pretty soon, just like you can get in your car and go to any place in your car that's in the state, you'll be able to get on your bike or your wheelchair, your walker, your roller skates, and you'll be able to go to that location as well safely.
Yeah.
You know, whatever age you are, ability you have.
That's 8 to 80.
Yeah. Yeah. 8 to 80, 8 to 108, you know.
Or younger or older.
Yeah, yeah. Really. And that's the dream I have. And that's why I'm so excited about the Salmonberry Corridor Trail. And I really appreciate, you know, Nathan pretty much guiding me out there and, you know, getting the maps and, you know, knowing that if something goes wrong mechanically with the bike that's above my head, that, you know, that he can really kind of step in and help out.
Yeah. Nathan, how long have you been wrenching bikes?
I started when I was 14. Okay. I grew up doing it.
There we go. Yeah. So a substantial amount of time, yeah. And you're very comfortable with all the parts and pieces thereof.
For the most part, yeah. I kind of steer away from suspension and hydraulic stuff because the serviceability once you get out into the wilderness is not really there. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, Aaron, you're no stranger to pulling your bike apart.
Oh,
whenever and wherever you happen to be.
Well, yeah, I like to tinker with my bike. I mean, my first bike I tinkered with a lot. And then, you know, when that got stolen,
sign of the cross.
Yeah, yeah, did a little. When that got stolen, I saw this as an opportunity to like build one from scratch. And so I'm pretty intimately knowledgeable of my bike at this point.
You know, very acquainted.
Yes.
Everyone should be.
Right. I've heard people say that before. Kind of like, you know, like if you don't know how your toaster works, you take it apart. You unplug it first, and then you take it apart, figure out what's
Please
up.
Please unplug it first.
Yeah. But it's great to know kind of the basic mechanics, and like, you know, the more you do and the more confidence you gain from doing those things, the more you can try later on. Yeah. Well, let's talk about, there's a couple other things, Nathan, that you've done that are fantastic and exciting. And the Divide was one of those. Was that a fat biking thing, or was this pre-fat biking?
No, that was, I just rode my 29er on that. So I started Divide Racing in 2010. I did the Great Divide Mountain Bike Race, which is similar to the Tour Divide, except only goes border to border from Canada to Mexico.
Okay, yeah.
As opposed to starting up in Banff, Alberta. And that was kind of my whole touchstone to kind of get back into cycling. I was out of it for 8 years or so and just kind of a commuter, and then decided I needed to get back into it and picked this big crazy race and
looking for a challenge,
looking for something to just motivate myself, and that did it. And I went out and rode from Montana to Idaho to Wyoming to Colorado to New Mexico in about 26 days. And
yeah. So what's that experience like? Because you're camping, I assume.
Right, yeah.
You're outdoors
I,
and whatnot.
I got a fair amount of hotels just because I was kind of green with the whole thing.
But okay.
Probably like 10 hotels. The other 15 nights, I just camped out wherever, in a ditch, in a field, in an outhouse.
Did you actually stay in an outhouse?
Yeah, I stayed in a couple. I stayed one outhouse I stayed in, one I stayed outside of.
Okay,
what
so
do you mean by outhouse?
You know, just a pit toilet.
You slept in there.
Yeah, well, in like the very...
How do you fit? Just for our listeners, Nathan's a pretty tall guy.
They're like 7 foot wide, and I'm 6'4", so...
Okay, so there's
plenty of room.
You slept diagonally,
right?
Across
the... just as far away from the toilet as possible.
Oh, you're talking about these like
the nicer ones.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, not, you know, like not, at the state parks.
Not the one with the moon on it. Sure. But the one.
Right. Okay, that's what I'm envisioning.
That was my original thought too. Yeah. It was like this little wooden shack,
no, right, or a porta potty or something. No, no. Okay, you're talking about ones that have like the hide a bed thing that folds out of the wall. You know, there's concierge service.
Yeah.
Although it is kind of weird when, like, the guy that offers you the towel is just kind of standing there all night just waiting for you to wake up.
But no, it was a really formative experience. It got me, you know, really cemented in the whole bikepacking world and just eating up with bikepacking. And I was just like, this is where it's at. People who carry these pannier bags everywhere, I need to figure out that these frame bags and seat bags are really sweet and keep all the weight centered on their bike.
Talk to us a little bit about that. Yeah. What's the difference this between riding with panniers or with some other form?
So panniers are great if you're, you know, loading and unloading a lot. You know, say you got a ton of stuff that you just need to dump out. If you're going to the grocery store, you got to throw a big grocery bag in it, that's fine. But say you're doing more off-road wilderness sort of riding, where there's single track or... just anywhere where you need a great degree of maneuverability, having all the weight on the outsides of the bike on the panniers is just less than optimal. And so in the past 10 years or so, there's been a lot of bikepacking frame bag manufacturers, and they make bags that are custom sized for your frame so you can put everything smack in the center of it and keep your weight consolidated. And they'll make these oversized seat packs, companies like Revelate, Apadura, Alpkit, and it's really transformed the way you can maneuver a bike, you know, off in the wilderness and through single track. And I just, even for commuting, I really recommend it. I mean, certain applications, like I said, you stop at the grocery store, you can't throw that big bag in there, but...
Although a baguette always sticks out of whatever you try and put it into.
Exactly.
If you try and put a baguette inside the frame of your bike, you might have better luck.
Right.
Yeah, and then you avoid the awkward situation that leads to, you know, hijinks and such in movies. I assume you're packing less if you're packing things inside the frame and onto, but maybe I'm wrong.
Right. So
what's the capacity compared to, like, say, a full traditional pannier setup?
So generally your ultralight riders are going to have, you know, much smaller stoves if they have a stove at all. You know, if you're going to be doing some crazy 80-day epic wilderness ride on gravel into the tundra, then sure, bring your panniers so you can bring all that food. But, you know, for the bike packing kits really shine on the, like, 3-day to week-long rides where you just kind of, you know, you bring enough to keep going, but it's not, you know, super mega-duper ultra epic. I mean, you can do that sort of stuff. You just got to be better about how you stash all your food. You know, most people only can fit 2-3 days food tops in a traditional bike packing setup.
Okay.
Unless they're just whizzes with their whole technique, so...
Unless everything is freeze-dried astronaut ice cream.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You don't get to bring the kitchen sink. You know, that's, I think...
You can bring the kitchen sink if you just spend a ton of money. It's all about buying the smaller, tiniest, lightest whatever, but...
Or if it's an actual kitchen sink, a Bob trailer.
Right. But...
But I see that as being less practical than other options. Yeah. So this... what's the difference also, maybe between... just thinking about if you're doing when you were doing the divide and you're camping outdoors, like some people are going to like set up an elaborate tent. They're going to have like really, you know, fancy sleeping accommodations. They're going to stop and take time to make coffee in the morning. I'm assuming that if you were doing this competitively and trying to finish in a certain amount of time, you were doing less of those things.
Right. Yeah. No, most of the serious racers don't have any sort of stove with them. Some of them will have kind of the bivy tent that actually sets up above them, just the one person. But a lot of racers will go with just an emergency bivy, which is basically just a trash bag to put on top of their sleeping bag. And then some folks just will not even bring a sleeping bag and just be like, I will sleep as long as I can in the cold. And then when I wake up cold, I need to ride and start
That's
riding.
Your sign that you slept enough.
Right.
That's insane.
It's a strategy that works.
I guess.
Yeah. So we've got that. There's also more recently, and actually that's not happening yet. It's coming soon. The Oregon Outback. This
right.
is something that, have you done this already?
Well, sort of. I went down, so the Oregon Outback, for anybody who's not familiar, it's a 360-mile bikepacking route from Klamath Falls.
Is an Amtrak stop.
Right.
So you can get there without a vehicle.
Right. Southernmost stop in Oregon and then get up to the Dalles, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It starts at it ends at the Deschutes State Recreation area there. But yeah, that's coming up May 23rd. And I went out in February and I was like, well, I think I can do this in February. And I took my fat bike out there, and it was a big ordeal. I got on the train, rode down, you know, I checked the snow levels and it said there was maybe 10 miles of snow that I might have to trudge through. And I was kind of prepared for that. I brought the fat bike. I was like, all right, I'm bringing the fat bike. It'll be the perfect bike for this route.
And 10 miles in snow feels like 50 miles anywhere else, right?
Yeah, it would be.
Depending on the type of snow. I mean, that's a big factor, what's riding in the snow.
Right. And that's kind of what it came down to. So I got down there and I rode out about 20 miles the night I got off the train, camped, woke up the next morning, continued on to this little town of Granby and, or not Granby, Beatty, and, stopped at the church there. Cause it was the only spot that had an overhang that I could stop and make some food and warm up. And, you know, the guy that opened up the church for service, like, oh yeah, you can't go that way. You're going to have to go around, you know, there's going to be too much snow. And, so I go, instead of taking the Outback route, I take this guy's suggested route to get around. And this is where having a map would have come in really handy.
Okay.
So here I am, just kind of, my GPS said to go the same route that he was telling me to go when I tried to get it to calculate. So I'm like, all right, I'll give this a shot. And
if I have to.
So I rode back up and I ran into the snow about 20 miles before it was projected on the map. So I figured it's like, okay, now that's 30 miles of snow that I have to push through.
Right. This is getting serious.
And so, you know, at first it was a paved road and the snow was just smooth on top of it. And that sort of stuff, you can ride 8 miles an hour and make really good time. It's not, you know, it's a little slower than gravel, but for the most part, it's just like anything else. And then I got up to about 5,200 feet and it just turned into this lumpy, full-on mountain biking experience. And I had, you know, a fully loaded bike. It was ready for 20 degree temperatures. Like, it was cold, super cold back there. So I had literally the kitchen sink and a good 25 pound pack on my back. And I rode through about 6 or 7 miles of that full on mountain biking in snow. And just, I realized it was completely futile and pointless and I needed to turn back around. Like I said, I didn't have my map. I was like, I didn't know how much more of it would be. I estimated at least another 20 to 25 miles. And so I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll try this again in May when the snow is melted with everyone else.
So are you doing this then? It's coming up at, is it Memorial Day weekend?
Right,
is
Memorial Day weekend. Yep.
Yeah, and this is the it's so popular. It's become just a
registration clogged. Is closed, everybody.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, and they're asking you kindly and politely not to snipe this ride, not to pirate it or whatever. What's the official term? I forget.
Crash?
Yes. You're not to show up unbidden.
Right.
Basically, the idea being that if everyone tries to do this all at once, it's going to be like, you know, going to the mall or something.
It's going to suck for everybody.
Right. Yeah. It'd be a big mall full of angry people in the middle of the
desert. Well, there's not a, you know, there's sections out there where there's no water for miles, for example, and then you may show up to just a little watering hole or something like that. You know, you don't want to be there with 300 other people at the same time.
Right. And part of the reason you do a route like this is to get away from society. So, yeah. Or as Eddie Vedder would say, society. So, yeah. This is good. It's great to kind of, you got in on the ground level, I suppose, like kind of before it exploded and registration was closed and stuff.
Right. No, I was all about it. Day one, I was signed up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, good luck with that. And, I'm trying to remember there's at least one other person I think that we talked about, they were going to go and do this and I wanted to hear how it went. So, we shall see. But yeah, enjoy, good luck, and again, everybody, don't go out and do this with everybody else. Registration is closed, but so many other weekends, so many other things.
Well, and he published the trail or the route on the site, so you can go do it anytime.
Exactly.
Well, that's right. But you know, there is a race coming up that does not have any resignation.
Well, you can't quit what you start.
Yeah, that's right. You can't start what you quit, I guess. There's no fee to join this race, and there's no prize money, but there is going to be a race.
Doing it for glory.
Yes, for glory. It is
the
Trans America race, the Trans Am race. It's the first year of this race. And
yes.
This is it's just an amazing thing. And it has really caught on. This is Nathan's brainchild. And I remember him talking about this stuff a few years ago. He's like, you know, I want to ride across the country. What I want to take this, the 1976 route the bike centennial
as it
route. And do that and see if I can get a top time on this. It's a longer route across the country. And that's what you were saying, Nathan, right? And then all of a sudden it's become a race across the country, unsupported race. So there's no drafting, there's no teams, there's no vans or motorhomes helping you out. You got to do the whole damn thing.
No German devil poking you with his trident.
There will probably be that.
Man, I will dress up as the devil as this ride goes through Portland. Right. Does it go through Portland?
No. Unfortunately, no.
No, the Transamerica route goes
through
Eugene.
I'm disappointed because
right?
the World Naked Bike Ride's the same day as the start of it.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. How great would that be?
Half tempted to just route all the racers into Portland.
Right, right.
Like a mandatory strip.
So you're going to ride that day naked, Nathan?
I wish. Yeah. Probably not.
Right.
So you've been surprised about how much this has taken off, right? I mean.
Right. Yeah. It was, I mean, just 9 months ago, it was just kind of me saying, yeah, I'm going to ride the Trans America Trail as fast as I possibly can. And a bunch of tourists going, why do you want to ride so fast and not appreciate life? And now all of a sudden I have 100 other people who want to ride it really fast with me, and all those tourist folks are like, well, I guess it's a thing. So.
That sounds kind of fun. I mean, people are doing it now. Yeah.
But
the tides of public opinion will turn so unexpectedly, maybe, but also predictably. Like, once something becomes a thing, people are like, well, okay, I guess it's cool.
But yeah, it's turned into quite the ordeal. I've got, you know, a good 10 or 15 divide racers signed up for it. There's a similar race that runs across Europe called the Transcontinental Race that was just ran last year for the first time. I got about 10 racers from it signed up.
Nice. So this is an international event.
Right. Yeah. We got about 20 people coming from around from other countries. You know, the other 8 are all American, but.
Are you worried about your chances now that there are so many other people participating?
Yeah, I've pretty much given up on any sort of hope of winning. We've got the male and female winner of the World Bicycle Race in 2012 both signed up. Both of them have had, at one point, the record around the world for the fastest circumnavigation.
Oh, my.
Folks like that, I can't compete with at this point. Maybe someday, but
right. We'll give it a couple years.
Back's got to heal up
right,
a little.
I'm still on the upswing the way I look at it. But
yeah.
But let's see, we've got some Ram racers signed up, Race Across America.
Right, which is that's the one where people just don't sleep, right?
Right, and they just have a car drive along with them and feed them intravenously, basically.
But, right,
and then some of the Randonneur folks, you know. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Randonneuring much, but
we don't know a lot of people, but I mean, we've heard about it, right?
I know the concept of
right.
it.
Right.
Basically just guys who ride folks who ride on the road all day and all night, and there's little to no support, and it's kind of a race, but it's not really racing. And,
right. Kind of like the sweet spot between competition and enjoyment.
So a lot of those folks, and then I got probably 10 to 20 folks who are just kind of tourists who want to do it a little faster, and they just want to be a part of the mass start. And
yeah,
more power to them for just lining up there.
And you have a documentary film crew that's going to be following along.
There's going to be a film made out of it. A cool guy named Mike Dion, who did another film called Ride the Divide.
Okay.
And,
Reveal
the Path, is signed on to work to do a film on this. Filming's definitely going to happen. We're not quite sure where it'll go past that, but
I might join in on that, at least in the Oregon section if I can, and maybe ride and film, take the disco track. I don't know.
That'd be beautiful. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I can go flat out on the disco track. I could probably stay with them maybe for a mile or two.
I need to ride the disco track someday.
Hell yeah.
I think I was going to ask last time I saw you with it, and I kind of was like a little too shy. It's just like it's so famous. And it was impounded.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people were riding it in the, you know, when it was an impound, you know, a lot of the cops were like,
let's check this
thing
out.
Let's go get donuts.
It's kind of like Ferris Bueller's Day Off in a weird kind of Portland version of that whole thing. Yeah. Well, this is very exciting. This I wish you the best, of course, Nathan, on this this track. You know, good luck. Hope it goes well.
Thank you.
And thank you for coordinating a thing that a lot of people got really excited about.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Yeah. Well, we should probably wrap up here. It's we're bumping up against people's time limits and against the patience of people who have us in their ears.
And so. Church.
Oh, yeah. And church, yes. So all of these things put together, let's wrap up again. It is rideyrbike.com.
Rideyourbike.com.
Rideyourbike.com. And Crank My Chain Cycle TV.
That's right, crankmychain.com. And yeah, check us out on all the different social media angles that you want, or better yet, in real life.
Yes, yes. Real life is actually kind of preferred if you can swing it.
Absolutely.
It's getting a little harder to swing these days.
The only way you can actually ride a bike is in real life.
That's true. Yeah. As much as we try, like, the computerized experience is just not as fun.
It doesn't compare.
Even like the full body controller in, you know, in which it didn't. Weren't you talking, Aaron, about this as a game you used to play back in the day? It was like a motorbike game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Hang on. It right. was, well, it was motorcycles.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
But yeah, the arcade version, like, mm-hmm. you were actually on this bike and you like leaned it one way or another to like make the turns.
They do have a bicycle racing arcade game at the Wonderland just down the street from here.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yes. Really? And those games change periodically. So like if you're in Portland, go ride the bicycle riding game.
Do it now while it's still there.
At the Nickel Arcade. Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, we can't tell you to do that. We're just saying it's there if you want to do it.
With your Google Glass, please.
Yes, yes, exactly. And your GoPro.
And only if you're shorter than 5'10", because the saddle doesn't raise on it.
Right, right. I want to see some sick edits from that experience, definitely. Should we do a little headlines, a little mail?
Yeah.
All right, sounds good. Here come some headlines. Just one, really.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast.
All right. From Oregon Live, a name is chosen for the new transit bridge. In a poetic nod to the indigenous people whose canoes once rippled the Willamette River's waters, TriMet on Wednesday named Portland's 12th bridge Tillicum Crossing. In the Chinook Wawa language, used by Native American tribes that lived along the region's waterways for centuries, Tillicum means people. Over time, it has also come to be used to describe friends. David Lewis, tribal historian for the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde, said many people are unaware of their history and their connection to what is now a bustling urban landscape. This is an amazing time to bring this name back, Lewis told a crowd gathered for the naming ceremony. A people's bridge, a people's crossing. Lewis said, with Mount Hood-shaped towers of the under-construction bridge looming in the background, Tillicum Crossing is really representative of all the people who live here, not just the tribes, because it will be the people's bridge. People will cross it back and forth to work every day.
Yeah, and this is kind of exciting. Also, I remember, I try not to focus too much on the negative aspects of things, but like whenever something goes onto the internet, everyone complains. And there was this thing of like, I mean, the name for the bridge was hotly contested. There were a bunch of great runners. Again, I am sad that they did not choose mine, but so it goes. The idea that this is a name that reflects like the historic residents of the area, the people that were here long before anybody else was here, before transit existed here. I mean, as we know it today with buses and such.
Right. But it was a transit of a different kind, maybe.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm super stoked that we know what it's called now. And this bridge is still on its way to completion. We're very close to this and all of the bicycle infrastructure that surrounds it. So the only thing that's missing is that Simon and Garfunkel song.
Bookends?
No, I'm feeling groovy.
Oh, right.
That was like they were going to put the ridges in the pavement. Yeah, and as you rolled your bicycle's tires over at a consistent speed, it would do like the... or something like that.
For real?
I think that was the idea, but it was too cost prohibitive for that to actually happen. Yeah, I still want to try that some other place. I wish I owned a concrete company.
You just like pirate across some.
Yeah, seriously.
Some just bridge somewhere. I
build my own. That, and I'm wondering, like, what's the niche market for kind of like the, you know, like wax cylinders and vinyl records and shit. Like, if you put something together, it was just like a big long path. Could you sell someone a groovy path that would like play their favorite song? I think there's a niche market to be filled here.
I'd buy it.
Yeah, there's enough people in this country with enough money
and enough land
and enough vanity.
Sure.
I think we're onto something.
Well, and with the congressional the decision about rail trails and kind of sure. like how rights default to people. People are worried about, like, you know, bicycle paths running through their houses, apparently, which is I don't know if either of you heard about this, but yeah, it was kind of the idea that a lot of these historic right of ways are where, like, you know, people's houses are located now, and right. people were terribly afraid that, like, if the legislation was allowed to continue as it was, that bikes would just, like, crash through their walls.
Right.
Well, wait a second. But these are railroad lines. So do the railroads crash through their walls?
I would assume so at some point.
Wasn't that, like, interesting? Part of, like, one of those, like, Steven Spielberg Amazing Stories series where, like, this this train line went through this person's house, you know, years and years ago, and then the house was built over top of it. But, like, something tragic happened on this train line. And so, like, every so often, the ghost train would go through this house.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so instead of
and
like
the
a
little
creak,
kid is like freaking out because you know, there's ghosts in his house.
Some ghosts make the floor creak at night, and some ghosts just go, and they just kind of like roll right through your house.
Well, at least you don't have to wait long for the ghost to go.
That's true.
It'll be loud, but it won't take long. Yeah, exactly. Maybe some rumbling of the floorboards. But anyways, all
and
that
they still won't let you in the dining car.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Or like, wouldn't it suck if it was a ghost train that stopped like at a historic train station where they ripped you off? Have you guys heard about this story? Like, it used to be back in the day when there was train service everywhere. A lot of trains would stop in a town, and a restaurant would set up this kind of like hustler's game where basically you would get off the train and run into the restaurant and be like, make me some food. I'm really hungry. And so, like, they would kind of delay your order a little bit. And
until the train
about
left.
The time the all aboard call came for the train, your food would come out and you wouldn't have time to actually eat it. And so, like, you would, you know, grab like a bite or two or something, or maybe nothing at all, and run back to the train.
So there's like a diner just running on one steak recook over and over again.
That's the thing. They would take the food and then they would like kind of like warm it up and serve it to the next, you know, train customers that were coming from the opposite direction or something like that. It was a big hustle, and they never actually had to. And then I suppose maybe they themselves ate the food after it was all said and done. But yes, unscrupulous people have lived along train lines for years. So yeah.
And guess what those people did in hell, in damnation?
Were they poked like Mark Cavendish?
No.
Okay.
They had to ride a train, and whenever they got hungry, they had to get off, right?
Oh, there we go. Right.
Food never came.
Yes, yes.
And then they're haunting people.
So this is the hell that's been wished upon them by their own actions.
So go to church, guys. It's Easter.
We've all learned something today. All right, you ready for just a little bit of mail?
I am ready for one piece of mail.
Hey, we got mail.
Steve, he's like laughing his ass off here. I'm trying to forget this.
Can you play that again, please?
God damn it.
It's so good. Check it out. Yeah.
We got mail.
Thank you.
Well, and since we're doing this, let me show you just the original. Oh, never mind. The original version is gone.
Oh, damn it. Okay. Oh,
it started by Aaron just kind of singing that as a joke, and I was like, hey, that's so good. We could develop that into a full-blown song.
That's you guys?
That's Aaron.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that.
And a bunch of MIDI instruments.
I was drunk on kombucha.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, Wyoming. Steve, Aaron, I felt for your indoor bike parking problem in my 40 years of riding bicycles into stores in Sheridan, Laramie, Casper, Cody, and Gillette, Wyoming, along with Billings, Bozeman, and Helena, Montana.
He rode them into stores? Like through the plate glass?
Well, yeah. Okay. The historic bike trails go through these stores.
Perfect.
It's just like the train, right?
Yeah. I've never had anyone tell me I couldn't do that. In fact, I've had the opposite result. Sometimes in a store I haven't had my bike in before, a clerk will suggest a place that is safer for my bike. Some stores and restaurants I frequent will ask me, "Where's your bike?" when I show up on foot. Yeah. Well, that just sort of rubs salt into the wound there.
Well, maybe just to say that this is you know, maybe one of the good things about smaller communities than the urban context is that there's a bigger embrace of people doing what they do and people being people. And yeah.
Well, the best part is when you go into a place, I mean, when it's a kind of crappy, but when you go into a place and they go, "Oh, sorry, you can't bring your bike in here." And you're like, "Okay, I'll go somewhere else.
I'll take my business elsewhere."
Yeah. That's what I should have done.
Yeah.
I was so determined that other day, though.
But then you have to say, like, "I'm going to buy my octogenarian cynicism and anger from someone else."
Right.
I guess.
That's pretty good.
Right, because he wasn't even, like, he wasn't the one selling donuts. He was just the angry old man.
No, I mean, he claimed to be the owner, like, stammeringly. But
we don't think that. And the person behind the counter wasn't backing him up.
No, the person behind the counter was just like, "Fuck, what do I do?"
They only pay me minimum wage.
Right. She was really polite, and I was really polite to her.
Yeah.
You know, and then I went back into shouting at this guy.
Yeah.
Shortly thereafter, my transaction was done.
Dangerous donuts.
Well, you completed your transaction with your bike.
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. Yeah. Kept it in the store.
Yeah. The one thing you never want to do is say something like, "What are you going to do, call the cops?"
No, he had already threatened to call the cops, and I actually called him on that bluff.
And this was here in Portland?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that can work in Portland, but it doesn't work in the small town.
Right.
That's true.
Trust me.
Well, and don't make them call the police on your disco track, I suppose, right?
Right. They'll take
it. It's hard to outrun.
Yeah. Yeah. And they just want to take it for a ride.
They do.
They can't be blamed.
They're jealous.
It's sparkly. Yeah. Well, hey, just for people's information, a couple of things. Aftermass, the documentary about critical mass in Portland by Joe Beal, it's coming to the Clinton Street Theater as well in a little while, and the tickets are available. So,
sweet.
If you would like to purchase them, you can. They're online. There will be a link on our website for your information. Also, the Pedal Power Talk Show with Boaz Frankel and Phil from Metrofeats. It's coming up on its third season, and we're going to be talking to them in just like a week or two, something like that. And they're having a little launch party they wanted everybody to know about. So that's May 1st, May Day, at the Keene Garage, and that's between Gleason and Hoyt in the Northwest neighborhoods. But yes, that's they want people to come out and celebrate with them because they've been doing this now for two seasons. They're beginning a third.
Really?
And they would like people. I guess that means they've already done the third season, and they're going to be distributing it. So anyways, if you haven't yet seen the Pedal Power Talk Show, I'm excited about this because Boaz, matter of fact, is the guy who once held the high-fiving, like Guinness Book of World Records, like most high fives in a certain given period.
Oh, really?
Yes, yeah.
That's badass. The
guy's a cool guy. And he also did a multimodal road trip across America using everything except a car, including like pogo sticks and couch bikes and that sort of thing. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. Anyways, we're looking forward to talking to them. But yes, those are two things that if you are so inclined, the possibility to go there exists.
And we'll have links posted.
Yes, we will.
I got one too.
Yes.
Pedalpalooza calendar. The print calendar is coming up. And so if you want, the calendar's up. You can put your stuff in there. And if you put it in now before mid-May, you'll be in the print calendar for Pedalpalooza. So come up with an awesome ride.
That's right.
And
yeah.
Then tell us about it and we'll see you there.
And schedule the awesome rides before someone else snaps up your awesome time slot. Because
exactly. Oh yeah. No, you're gonna the good time slots are filling up already.
Yeah. So make sure you do that. Well, hey, this has been a great show. Let's close
it's
it out.
Been awesome.
Yes. Thank you again, both of you, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
I don't want to go.
You can hang out.
Oh,
well, I'll even leave the microphones running.
Can we do an Easter egg?
We'll close the show. Okay. Yes. Yes.
I'll hide these donuts around the house.
I'll show you all the Easter eggs on my Macintosh. All right. Wait,
and we're back. I'm back, Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
All right.
Sorry.
Really?
Sorry.
Yeah, we got it now. Here it is. What the fuck is up with this thing?
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests. Write to us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message or text at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder. And thanks to sustaining donors Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katharina Melengard, Roger Five Eggs or Five Chickens Grigsby, and Wayne Norman. I fucked that up. I can't believe I fucked that up.
That's funny, though. I like it. Ride fat.
I just want to take a moment. Nathan's had a back injury recently, and I wanted to say, you know, we could stand up if it made you more comfortable.
That's true.
Maybe in a bit. I'm fine for now.
All right.
I'm fine for
okay.
now.
Do you want to pop that up a little higher for you?
Yeah, we can just...
Sorry about that. It's all of our stands are kind of fucked up right now.
That's how it always works.
You know.
I got a whole pile of screwed up ones at my practice space.
Sure. Just to know it exists.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This is why
it's
we're
a good archive.
That's why you're here, because you're famous.
Yeah. Right. I'm famous on the internet.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I was talking to Maria, who was on the jury, and she's like, which one was your favorite? Of course, anytime somebody asks me that, I just draw a blank. Like, wait, I just watched a bunch of movies. I need to recall one.
Right, right. I'm going to put one up to the top.
A Sprocket Studios production.